Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that is a model of opposites, in age certainly, but also sometimes in the opinions that we three tend to hold. That makes for good debate, actually, though I'm not sure just how much our opinions are going to differ this week. The first film we'll discuss is Sperm World, an adaptation, actually an expansion, of a 2021 New York Times article about the unregulated world of sperm donors. The second is Girl State, a film co-directed by Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss, the husband-wife team behind the 2020 documentary Boy State. Let's begin with a bit of sex. Or not. Because despite its title, very little sexual intercourse takes place in Sperm World, a Hulu streamer that was directed and co-written by Lance Oppenheim, the guy behind the 2020 documentary about a Florida retirement community, Some Kind of Heaven. Instead, what Sperm World does is follow the lives of people who, since the coronavirus pandemic first hit, turned to unregulated sperm donors and away from, many of them claim, the so-called sperm banks that charge fees they can't afford. Oppenheim focuses on three men and the women in their lives, one of whom has impregnated more than 100 women, one who tries to impregnate a woman less than half his age, and a third who manages to impregnate a half dozen women, but ironically can't manage to do the same for the woman he loves. More of a reality show than a true documentary, with several scenes obviously scripted, Sperm World is an exploration of a world that many of us will find both strange and fascinating at once.
I want to go back to something you just said. What do you mean by reality show?
Reality show.
Because I'm not sure what.
There were so many of those scenes in which the camera was there and it's like, okay, now look pensive or whatever. I mean, it's such an intrusive thing that it had to have been set up somehow.
I see what you mean. Well, I think maybe using the term reality show is going to give people a wrong idea of the tone of this movie
you.
And the style of
I
this
got
movie.
You. Because it's more like cinema verite, but still manipulated
okay,
somehow.
I see what you mean. I see what you mean. Well, and that's in keeping with Lance Oppenheim's style.
Yeah.
We reviewed
Some Kind of Heaven
was
like that. Yeah,
we reviewed his documentary Some Kind of Heaven, which is about, as you mentioned, that retirement home community.
And we all liked that movie.
Yeah, I really liked that movie. I think I put it on my top 10 list. And I think that the style of that film fit the subject because the villages, the town itself, is such a strange and almost alien place. And so weirdly and perfectly manicured that his style, which he, in that film at least, he liked to put people, you know, dead center in the frame like Errol Morris used to do in films like Gates of Heaven. It kind of fit the themes that he was exploring and the place that he was filming in. His style in Sperm World, I think, sometimes works against what he's trying to do because it's so invasive in some ways, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about whether or not he scripted things because I don't know if that's true. I'm talking about the way that he chooses to photograph people and the way he chooses to edit the footage together, because sometimes it's very effective and sometimes it's not. So he likes to put his camera either very far away from the subjects or really high above them. And if it's not really far away, it's extremely close. So he kind of alternates between those two modes. And then he's also color graded the movie. So it has this kind of scuzzy fluorescent quality to it that made me feel like I don't think any of these places really looked like this. It's almost like he's just putting his thumb on the scale a little too much, if that makes sense. But I think what's so fascinating about Sperm World ultimately are the three guys. And of course, a documentary is often only as interesting as the people that are in it. And he has found three deeply fascinating people.
And very different.
And very different. And as you said, Dan, in the intro, this film is as much about these three guys. And I don't know if it ever answers the mystery of why do they do this, because I think some of them don't even know why they do it. I mean, the guy that's doing it purely for the cash, I think that makes a little bit more sense than the guy who has fathered 150 plus kids and regularly visits them.
Yeah. In fact, doesn't live in any place permanently.
Yeah. He's constantly traveling. So it's as much about those guys as it is about the people in their lives. And I think, you know, the person in it that stuck out to me the most was the wife of the guy who who is doing it for the cash, and she accompanies him to a lot of these meetups.
I think she's his fiance, but
Natasha. And there's a scene with her and a teenage daughter of her fiance's where clearly the teenage girl is very jealous that he suddenly, quote unquote, gained custody of this other kid that he's fathered. And just the dynamics between those two women, I think, are the heart of the movie that is ostensibly about these three men. I think it's the women characters in this almost that give it that sense of empathy. So it's not just a like a Jerry Springer kind of
gawking kind of thing. The thing that's interesting about that relationship is she and Tyree are trying to have a child of their own.
Yeah.
And that's been a challenge for them. And so you're sort of seeing her own personal journey against the backdrop of what her fiance is doing versus the journey of these other people. And so, Nathan, I agree with you. There was something, was this supposed to be sort of like a back alley situation? Because that's how it was filmed. And I think that there were aspects of this that, you know, were, I mean, legally, is this okay? Yeah, I mean, I think so, right?
These people are using their, what I assume are their real first and last names. Their faces are unblurred. We see some of them at their jobs. And I kept wondering, you know, why did they agree to do this? But maybe it is.
But I mean, you know, so he is right. This is an unregulated area because obviously we have formal procedures that sperm banks that are set up as corporations, you know, have these certain criteria, waiting periods, you know, a lot of hoop jumping and so forth.
Money.
Yeah. But I thought probably this documentary worked the best in those sort of quiet moments. So in Sperm World, one of the donors is this 65-year-old guy, and you're sort of like, I don't know. You got those swimmers going, mister? And and I guess he did. But he meets a woman who had cystic fibrosis, and she would not have qualified to be an adoptive mom or to probably participate in other means to have a child.
Right, and like he IVF wants, or anything like that.
Right, and he wants to help her. But at the same time, you know, we see her grapple with the prospect of her not being alive to raise this child. And then what happens?
Yeah.
And that's an interesting piece, too,
well,
because
I think what you were going to say is that the relationship between them kind of deepens in ways that she certainly doesn't expect. And we wonder about that guy in particular, Stephen. We wonder, well, what are his motivations? Because he's getting closer and closer to this
woman.
It
seems like he wants a friend.
And I wonder,
or more than that, because there's also some anger simmering underneath his very
placid surface.
And
I wonder a lot about things such as, where does Stephen get his money? We see him operating as an Uber driver, but he lives in this wonderful house with a pool. And then the other guy, Tyree, we find out he went to prison, but we never found out why.
Yeah.
You know, so there we get a lot of information about these people, but I don't think in some cases enough.
Well, I think that that's probably the point. I don't think that Oppenheim wants to answer all of the questions that you have, at least because if he did, he would have included them in the movie. But this is only, what, an 80-minute film? And it is grappling,
I think,
it is grappling with these huge issues. I mean, we were talking about this before the show, but even just the issue of the lengths that some of these people are going to have a child, even though many of them probably do not have the means to maybe even care for a child, but there's something driving them. And we see messages from these Facebook forums, because this is where people
connect. That's where they connect, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, and we see these messages where people are saying, I don't know why, but I just have to have a child, and it would mean so much to me. And so these people are going to incredible lengths to do it. And we assume that some of these men have altruistic motives in mind. And we are told explicitly in the movie that some of them do not. And I think the movie could have gone into even darker directions than it does. But it, you know, it stays.
And I think by far, in many ways, Ari is the most fascinating.
He's the guy with the 150 plus kids.
Yes. Yeah. And so we don't really appreciate fully why he's doing it. And even he has conversations with his aging parents. And his mother's just like, she can't wrap her mind around it.
Yeah.
And, you know, she feels as though he's betrayed his Jewish heritage and so forth by doing this. And he doesn't have a place to live. He travels all over the world and visits these kids. But maybe it's useful for the kids to say that they have a dad.
Maybe.
Even if they see him only once every.
And I want to stress once again that even though the movie opens with what one woman later describes as a horrendous one-night stand, that's really the only kind of sexual congress that happens. The rest of it mostly takes place in parking lots with one guy showing up, the donor showing up with the recipient and doing his business in a car, in a cup, and then handing it off. So it's not a romantic film
at all. Well, and it's not explicit really in any way.
No.
It's very clinical and many other adjectives.
many other
that
adjectives.
You can probably imagine. Yeah.
And that was our discussion of the Hulu documentary Sperm World. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to tackle the documentary Girl's State. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Wherever life takes you, take Spokane Public Radio with you. You can stream your favorite public radio station on your smartphone, computer, smart speaker, or any mobile device. Visit SpokanePublicRadio.org and click Listen Live. Pick KPBX, KSFC, or KPBZ and start listening. Or just ask your Amazon Echo or Google Home smart speaker to play Spokane Public Radio. Listen live to Spokane Public Radio at work, home, or wherever you go.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbender, and I talked about the Hulu documentary Sperm World. Let's now turn to Girl State, an Apple TV streaming movie that was made by the same filmmaking team responsible for the 2020 documentary Boy State. One of the questions that some of us had about that film was, if we're going to spend so much time with boys, what about the girls? It comes as no surprise, then, that husband and wife filmmakers Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss have returned with a film that provides an answer. They do a near repeat of Boy State, only this time, instead of Texas, they go to Missouri, where, for the first time in 2022, the American Legion-sponsored annual event is holding Boy State and Girl State conferences at the same time and place. They focus primarily on the girls, though, as they congregate on a university campus and go through many of the same procedures, campaigning for political positions, everything from governor to Supreme Court justice, while getting to know each other. And again, we're introduced to a range of characters, from the tall, blonde, ambitious, and aptly named candidate for governor, Emily Worthmore, who considers herself one of the few conservative voices in the group, to Tochi Ihekona, a child of Nigerian immigrants who aims to run for the position of attorney general. Set just a short time before the U.S. Supreme Court would overturn the Roe v. Wade abortion decision, the film features the girls debating that issue, among others, but mostly simply trying to find their way in a world that hasn't always supported their rights to have the same chance at a future as boys.
I want to give people some notice that Dan and I almost stopped watching this movie in like the first 10 minutes because there is this scene where the girls gather and they're all excited. And then they sing what is probably the worst group song I have ever heard maybe in my life. And I was like, I don't think I can watch this.
Worse than We Are the World?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I think it was.
At least you can hum that, you know.
That's true.
But I'm encouraging people to hang in there because different from Boy State, this really does sort of focus on this theme of female empowerment in a way that honestly I didn't expect coming out of Missouri. And when we meet these girls initially, we're not sure how they're going to interact with one another. And there's some unusual alliances that form. There's some friendships that develop, and we can see that happening. I mean, I think what I liked best about this was some of the girls, we know where their path is going to take them ultimately. But then we have someone like Emily Worthmore in Girl State who, you know, I thought I had pigeonholed her. I thought I knew who she was. And then all of a sudden, when things don't turn out exactly like she hoped they might, she sort of shifts her focus pretty readily to do kind of a commentary, opinion, bit of investigative journalism piece on the inequalities between the funding of the Boy State program by the American Legion and the funding of the Girl State program by the American Legion
Auxiliary,
which should tell you everything you need to know. But yeah, so the boys are in the background, and maybe you think that there's going to be more interaction, social interaction between the groups, but that really doesn't happen. The girls are very focused, and even the one young woman who I had sort of viewed as maybe being a little flighty turned out to be very thoughtful. I mean, they're going to argue about reproductive autonomy issues before their Supreme Court. And I was impressed with how knowledgeable they were, how serious they were, how motivated they were.
How articulate they were.
Yeah. And so, again, I think that this is a nice companion piece. In some ways, I thought Boy State was better, maybe just because it's the first one in this series. But overall, I think, you know, a nice watch if you want to feel inspired for the future and maybe women in politics. You see all these young women who were there because they have an interest in politics, which is unusual these days.
Well, and I think that as it was with Boys State, watching this, I just kept thinking, this whole thing is so strange, isn't it? Like, I think maybe I didn't feel it as much this time because I'd seen the first one. But once you kind of get past just the ritualistic kind of strangeness
you're able to get into the
– and again, as we talked about in the first part of the show, you really get involved with these people. It's almost tempting – I keep wanting to say characters, but, you know, they're real people. So the subjects of this documentary. And if Boys State was something of an allegory for – the modern political landscape and kind of the machinations of it. Like, we saw these kids kind of figuring out how to brand themselves so that they could basically be elected into this pageant of political power, because that's basically what it is. And also we saw how the ones who were at Boys State because they actually had faith in the government or they actually cared about the issues that they were quote unquote campaigning for, leave that weekend feeling a little bit more jaded about how things actually work, because it is a popularity contest. Ultimately, Girls State, by contrast, is more about the differences between Boys State and Girls State. The movie isn't as concerned about how the system works than it is with how the system treats women in relation to how it treats men. And
that's
going
an
back
excellent
to,
observation.
And going back to that word auxiliary, that's basically how they treat Girls State. Because Boys State, the program, the way that it positions itself is we're trying to find the next great leaders of American politics. Whereas Girls State is sort of like, isn't it precious that the girls also think that they can do politics? Yeah. Like, it has that vibe about it. And what I liked about the film was that the girls in Girl State see through that immediately.
Yeah.
Like, they get it right away and they go, well, why do the boys get to have an actual sitting governor coming over and doing the swearing in where it's just one of the staff members doing it here? Why do we have a dress code when the Boys State, no one cares what's going on?
Why do they have a gymnasium
there?
And we don't?
Absolutely. There's another really fascinating comparison here where the Emily Worthmore character, again, I called her a character, but she's a real person. Emily Worthmore notices that the voices that seem to be loudest at Girls State are more on the progressive side. Whereas if you'll recall in Boys State, it was the exact opposite, where you had these
more
kind of conservative guys doing their kind of macho posturing. And so there's a lot of fascinating comparison points. At first, I thought this movie, it kind of seemed unfair that, like, the Girls State, it's the sequel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of their point, is that it's treated as less important, as there's less pomp and circumstance here.
Yeah,
so I thought that
was
fascinating as an observation.
Yeah, if we want to make a larger commentary about film itself and how it treats women, in Boys State, there were some mean boys. But there were no mean girls in Girls State.
That we saw, at least.
That we saw.
Yeah.
I mean, which is, I think, the point that they're trying to make there. I mean, I assume you could have seen some, but that's not in the movie.
But I mean, I think even talking about it like that is kind of proving their point a little bit. Because, like, I think that women could be just as cutthroat and horrible in politics as men could be. Because ultimately, that's how you rise in the ranks, not only of Boys and Girls State, but of politics in general, is that you have to be able to take down your opponent and not look back. And I think that, you know, maybe this movie soft pedals that element of things a
little
bit.
Well, and the other thing that was not emphasized in Girls State is the fact that we do see two girls aspire to do something specific, to play specific roles, and they're unsuccessful. So they ultimately lose because it's a zero-sum game to some extent.
But they adapt.
Okay, but it almost appeared as though they were the most resilient humans on the planet, because it wasn't like, you know, any crying, and maybe that was purposeful. There wasn't any, like, sort of lamenting what had happened, to the extent that I would have been, like, thrown out the curse words or something, at least. They just are, like, on to the next thing.
But to your point, Nathan, let me just say that the women that we've seen in American politics who have been successful have followed the plan that you talked about, been cutthroat, let's go do it. But the idea of women in government always has been, we can do it differently, we can do it a different way, we can do it without all that hard knock stuff.
Or
and maybe
we can
that's
do
what
it
the
just
movie's
as
trying
well.
To say.
There's that too.
We can do it just as well, but in a different way.
Yeah, well, and going back to what you were talking about with the emotion, one of the most relatable parts of the movie, because I thought this is how I would probably be, is Emily loses one of the races that she was eyeing. And that's the adaptability part that you talk about. And there's a little moment, and I'm glad they kept it in, but there's a moment where she's in the cafeteria and she drops like some potato salad on the floor and she totally breaks down.
Yeah.
And you know that she's
it's
not crying.
It's a cumulative effect of,
Yeah, she's not crying because she spilled food. It's that all of this happened and on top of that, I dropped my lunch and the lunch represents something much greater than just potato salad on the floor.
And I thought that also her interaction with the staff person who comes over and he's like, oh, I do this all the time. So, I mean, we could see this sort of male presence, one of the only male presences in the film, you know, sort of reaching this collaborative course of dealing with her about what happened and so forth.
So it sounds like we've talked about two documentaries during this show, Sperm World and now Girl State. And it sounds to me like the three of us like Girl State better than Sperm World.
I would probably say that's true, yes.
But
although
not
by
much,
I liked
honestly.
Both. And I think that...
Well, one is more intriguingly made. Sperm World certainly is.
Yeah, and I would say that it's probably more about its style than this one is. But, I mean, this one still has style just because it isn't ostentatious about it. I would say the same about Girl State as I did about Boy State, which is... And maybe even Sperm World. Let's throw that in here. I would like an up style series where every 5, 7, 10 years, name your number, we check back in on these people.
Seven up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I want to know
Ari
where these people are.
Ari can have 1,000 children by that time.
Well, and I want to know, you know, are these teenagers who have either political aspirations or journalistic aspirations or whatever their aspirations may be, where are they now? Yeah. And that's, I think, another sign of a good documentary. I want to know what happens
next. I think
you're
absolutely right. At any rate, that was our discussion of Girl State, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the documentary Sperm World. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the writer Nick Hornby. Nobody should have children just because it made the photo library on the computer more interesting. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.